Hi, I'm Jerry Ellis, host of Talking Apes, and this is a spoiler alert. You won't get many of those on Talking Apes, but you're about to hear one of four podcasts in our exclusive Talking Apes World Chimpanzee Day celebration. As we take a deep dive into the making of Chimp Empire, the new Netflix nature docuseries, we will go behind the scenes with the folks that made it. So before listening much further, I really encourage you to watch this extraordinary four-part series, Chimp Empire, and then come back to our exclusive Talking Apes World Chimpanzee Day event, where we'll dig into the details of the characters and the events creating this amazing series. Okay, there's your spoiler alert. You've been warned.
Who are we? How did we become the way we are? As humans, we spend our lives trying to understand ourselves. But sometimes it feels we're too close to see clearly. That's why we love stories from other worlds. And the world of chimpanzees, so similar to ours in some ways, but so different in others. Tells us stories more revealing than you can imagine. Stories all the more powerful because they are real.
Welcome to our exclusive Talking Apes Behind the Scenes podcast series on the making of Chimp Empire, the extraordinary Netflix four-part docuseries unlike any nature film you have ever seen. This episode features our conversation with Chimp Empire's scientific consultant and primate behavioral ecologist, Dr. John Matani. Professor emeritus from the University of Michigan, he has spent over a quarter century studying and learning from the chimps of Ngogo. John's intimate knowledge, experience, and insights into the over 200 chimps of the Central and Western groups was critical to not only ensuring scientific accuracy, but enabling director James Reed and the camera crews to bring a look and a feeling of intimacy into the lives of the Ngogo chimps that we see in the film. Chimp Empire captures in astonishing film detail the complex lives of the largest wild chimpanzee group known, over 200 chimps living in the secluded Ngogo rainforest of Uganda's Kibale National Park. Stunningly filmed and thoughtfully written, and narrated by Academy Award-winning actor Mahershala Ali, the story centers around alpha male named Jackson and the chimp community of Ngogo's central group. Chimp Empire moves between moments of great tenderness and intimacy of family life to the violent brutality of all-out war. It's a story of individuals, too, each one unique in character, each with their own ambition, hopes, and fears, of friendships forged and of loyalties lost, of societal hierarchies and benefits and struggles that come together with such an intelligent and emotional ape like us. And now my conversation with Professor John Matani. Hi, John, and welcome to Talking Apes. I can't even tell you how excited I am to have you to talk about an amazing film or series, I guess, Chimp Empire. So thanks for being on.
Well, no, thank you. And I'm delighted to be here today.
If you could give us just a little bit of a background about Ngogo, where it is in Uganda, and why it's so special and why this group of chimps is so special. So it sort of sets the stage for why the film was made there. And a bit of your background as to how long you've been there and what you've done.
Sure. Well, Ngogo is located in Kibali National Park in the southwest portion of the East African country of Uganda. Kibali turns out to be one of the premier primate field research sites established 50 years ago now by Tom Stewsaker. And since Tom established his study sites in the park, there have just been anybody in the world of primatology practically has studied primates there. And that's one of the things that attracted me to this place called Ngogo. Studies of chimps had been conducted in the park by Richard Wrangham in the northern part of the park at a site called Kaniwara. Richard actually is really responsible for bringing me and David Watts to Ngogo because Richard on the side was trying to get something started there. And he was really looking for somebody to start studying chimps at Ngogo. And I went with David in the summer of 1995, just to take a look, not thinking that I ever do anything there, since I had already been studying and was continuing studies of wild chimpanzees in the Mahale Mountains in Tanzania with Toshisada Nishida. I just went there because I always wanted to see the place. But when I got there, it didn't take very long to realize that the place was unusual. And the unusual thing about Ngogo is that there are chimps and that they are everywhere. It's by far the largest group of chimps that has ever been studied in the wild. There are well over 100 chimps when we started. The community grew to an astronomical size, over 200 individuals at one time. And that was really the thing that brought me and David Watts, my friend and collaborator on this project, to Ngogo and really to start this project. When we got there, it was instantly clear that this place was really, it was unique and unusual in its just size. So that sort of provides a little background for
study. As a reference, what is a normal size group of chimpanzees that you like at Mahale in Tanzania? What would have been the size of the group there?
Well, the group that I was studying at Mahale was up until then the largest group that had ever been described at slightly over 100 individuals. When I was there working in the early 1990s, it was down to about 90. And since then, it has shrunk in size. And on most other sites where chimps have been studying in the wild, they're run on average only about 40 to 50, 60 individuals tops. So going to Ngogo and seeing that there were well over 100 individuals right from the get-go was quite shocking, quite alarming, quite interesting. That was the real and initial draw for us.
Huh. You just used the word alarm. It was quite alarming. Why alarming that there would be that many chimps?
Because nobody had seen this many chimps together before. And I can't tell you, I'll never forget that first summer. We'd go out and they were unhabituated to our presence, so they consistently run away. But still, given that there were chimps and that they were everywhere, it was very easy to find and follow them for short periods of time, at least. And when I saw that sort of provided the impetus to continue, because at least initially, during that first visit, things seemed so wonderful and easy. It quickly got a lot harder, but still, it was quite exciting. The other thing that maybe motivated me initially right from the start was Tom Stewsaker, of all people, showed up during that first summer. I had known Tom. I had met Tom before. He was one of the first graduate students of my postdoctoral supervisor, Peter Marler. I sort of already felt I was part of the Kibali family because of my association with Tom. But then when he came out that first summer, I had some of the best times I ever had in the field in 45 years working in primate field work, we'd go out on what Tom would call these nature walks. And I would just pick his brain and try to have him tell me everything he could about Ngogo, the site, Kibali in general, Uganda, and his already 30, 40-year career there. It was quite a time.
Wow. So let's turn to the film and the film series for a while. It sounds like that was one of the driving reasons to even do a film there, because of the uniqueness of it. And I remember you've been part of two films. Is that correct? That James Reed, the director, has done at Ngogo?
That's correct. The genesis of Chimp Empire really starts with my association with James Reed, who had been to Ngogo 2016, it must have been. But in 2017, he produced a feature-length documentary on the Ngogo chimps called Rise of the Warrior Apes. The things turned out that all of us associated with Ngogo chimpanzees were just very happy, quite thrilled with what he did. And after the release of that film, James and I kept in touch. We'd become really good friends. We'd meet from time to time, here and there. We talk regularly. And some of those meetings, some of those discussions, I can remember maybe telling them, you know, you really should come out again and do another film, a follow-up on Ngogo chimps. And I was quite surprised, having made those suggestions oftentimes half in jest. It was in the latter part of the summer 2020, right after COVID had exploded. James called me up one day and he says, John, I got a commission from Netflix to come out and do a series on Ngogo chimps. And I was surprised given the timing. I was wondering, well, how are we going to make this happen? Because we are in the midst of COVID. We're allowed to maintain a skeleton crew of some of our Ugandan field assistants, as well as our Ugandan camp manager throughout the COVID pandemic. But at that time, right after COVID had exploded, the Uganda Wildlife Authority, which oversees research and work in the park, had asked all foreign researchers, you know, just because of safety and health precautions, to leave, and we had all left. And, you know, again, this is during right smack dab as COVID had erupted, and had no idea when, if ever, I could go back. And James comes to me with this proposal. I want to do the series. And I sat there listening to him and said, oh, yeah, fine. Good, wondering how the hell are we going to make this work given the situation. And my skepticism about the project or what he was telling me heightened when he actually told me what he wanted to do, because it was absolutely nuts. He wanted to come to film Ngogo, but he wanted to come essentially for a year and a half, and come to shoot for six separate shoots initially over the next year and a half. And he wanted to come not with one, but with two film teams, each composed of two camera ops, and plot those guys down on the two groups that we currently study there. And, you know, nothing like this had ever been proposed, tried before. I thought he was absolutely nuts. No part of James's genius. You know, he had worked with chimps. He knew how difficult it would be to properly document the lives of, you know, chimpanzees in the real world. You know, it'd take some time, money, and effort to do so. And he knew that to produce a real show that would actually depict chimps as they actually live their lives, it would take some time. That's the way the whole thing started. I had a lot of doubts about whether this would fly, and he pulled it off.
Were your doubts, what was the What was the root of those doubts? Was it because of COVID, or was it because of the chimps, or it just the whole idea of spending outsiders spending that much time? Like, where were the doubts?
I think it was the first and the third. It was one during COVID again. And we were, had left. I was away for the first time for an entire year during over 20 years of working there. I wasn't allowed to go back. I was wondering, well, how are we going to do this? If, you know, foreign researchers can't be there. And second, I did kind of have some thoughts, and I wondered, well, you know, there's a lot of people. It's a lot of time. Who knows? Nothing like this has been tried before. Can it really be pulled off? But James has a, you know, he's obviously a very talented filmmaker, and he really has this ability just to attract some of the best in the business. And, you know, he and some wonderful people, top to bottom, from the camera ops, field producers, folks back home, you know, back at Underdog Films, his base, working on this, and just a wonderful and amazing group, a talented group of folks to put this together. And, you know, I've worked on the Ngogo Chimps have been filmed many, many times by many people. You know, they were in the original Planet Earth, filmed, what, nearly 15, 20 years ago. They were subjects of, it was a fairly long project, a theatrical film produced by Disney 10 years ago. Since COVID, they've already been in two other series, one by the BBC, one by Netflix. I just came back from Ngogo. We're filming on another series, probably be released in 2025. There's filming ongoing right now for yet another project. So the Ngogo Chimps have been filmed many times by many people, but nothing like this. And I just wondered, given the time and effort and the number of people involved, you know, some of the problems and complexities that might arise. But
well, let's break those down, because, you know, in our emails back and forth, you said no other production will or has given someone like me this kind of input. And then you in subsequent emails, you went on to talk about some of the things that you've been involved in. And I guess when I watched the film, and having been around chimps and filmed chimps, first of all, it's extraordinary filming. And by, you know, anyone listening to this, if you haven't, we've told you should watch the film before listening to this. But if you haven't, put us on pause for a moment and go watch at least the first episode, because the filming is really extraordinary. It's not only the quality of it is brilliant, as part of this series that we're doing sort of behind the scenes of Chimp Empire. We spoke with Ben Saad and talked to him about some of the filming. It really is unlike anything that I've seen anyone else do. Not only is it very intimate and personal, but just the overall quality of it is just extraordinary. As we were beginning to put this whole behind the scenes series together, I was really curious to talk to you for a couple of reasons. One is to get that kind of access, that almost embedded journalism kind of feel to it. You almost feel like the cameras are mosquitoes that are flying around the chimps, and the chimps are almost unaware. And I'm sure that has to do with the years of habituation and activity that you and David and others have been involved in. But there's also, it feels like they didn't compromise the science also.
Well, I was a scientific consultant on the film. And I was, in retrospect, engaged in all aspects. I've already discussed a little about how this thing got started in my initial conversations with James. And to be honest, my role kind of evolved as the series was being produced. After those initial conversations, when we sort of outline the parameters and sort of the schedule for the filming, I thought, okay, that's it. And just step back and let James go at it. But right from the get-go, he asked me, well, why don't you come to the field for some of the filming? And I was happy to do that. Go out and hang out with James, who I've already said has become a really good friend, and he's always fun to be around. And second, well, just to be back in Gogan because it's one of my favorite places on Earth. But even when I went out there, my role as the scientific consultant was undefined. I remember some of the camera ops like Ben asking me, well, what are you going to do here? And I said, well, who knows? Well, I should go out, try to find the chimps for you, try to help you follow them. And as things evolved and things got underway, I felt that one of the most important things I could do to help the film crew was to get them into positions where they could film the kinds of things that they wanted to film. And this involved all kinds of things. You know, if you watch Chimp Empire, there are many shots of the chimps looking into the camera. Now, that seems all good and well and seems like it should be fairly easy, but it's not. And it's not because they're not actors. They're not taking direction from the film crew, James and others, about, oh, you get in the shot and we're going to film you head on. You know, we're constantly, as observers of the chimps, we're constantly following them. So you get plenty of butt shots, but it's really hard to get out ahead of them and to get those, you know, head-on shots. I felt it my responsibility, part of my duty, was to try to help the film team sort of shoot, get in positions for shots like that, knowing generally what the chimps do, where they might go from one spot to the other. There's a rain dance filmed in the first episode. Another camera op who's just a magnificent cameraman, one of the first things I told Ewan, first, these are really hard to film because they're in torrential downpours. You know, you have to keep the camera dry. Second, the chimps are running around. They're dancing. They're moving around in a torrential rainstorm. But having watched these things for years, it's become evident to me that they'll start in one area, and once they start, they might run away, and it's impossible to film them as they're running away, as the rain's coming down, but they often come back right to the same spot where they started. So I told you and Ben and some of the other camera ops, well, if you're getting in a position where a male chimp starts one of these dances, just stay there. It's useless trying to run around, film them. More often than not, they're going to come right back where they started, and if you're in a good position, in an open area, that's probably your best chance to film something like this. So it's like just inside knowledge that I've gained following chimps 30 years, helping feeling that my role in the field was just to try to help the camera people, first, A, find the chimps, second, follow them from here to there, and then third, maybe get in positions to shoot the kinds of things they wanted to shoot.
That's what seems to me one of the trickiest parts of this, being that, well, I guess I should first ask, when you were having those initial conversations with James, is the film that you now see in Chimp Empire, when you watch it, is that the film that he wanted to make? Is that the film that he described to you? Is that... You laugh.
I do laugh because that's a great question. And again, maybe, you know, I should say, a nature doc on chimps is inherently difficult to do. A, because the chimps aren't actors. You know, you could have a script, but you can't be assured that the chimps are going to do what you want them to do. And I remember maybe it was during that first shoot, I was out with James talking to him, okay, what do you want to do? And he did have a sort of a script and ideas for what he wanted to show in this series. And to be honest, I'm not sure the final product resembles, you know, what he wanted to do. Because for viewers or listeners who have seen Warrior Apes, they would have seen a show about the Ngogo chimps, which highlights a lot of things that many people know about chimps, you know, male dominance hierarchies, a struggle for dominance, power plays, male politics, intergroup rivalries, intergroup aggression, hunting of monkeys. You know, and that's been done. It's been done several times. It was done in Warrior Eight. So if I might be speaking out of turn for James, but as I recall those initial conversations, the conversation went, well, in Chimp Empire, what he really wanted to do was show all these other aspects of chimp life that really aren't very well known. Things like mother-infant relationships. You know, having watched Chimp, chimps, mothers are some of the best mothers you'll ever find in the world. They form long-lasting, enduring bonds with their kids. As you can see, some of those bonds endure even into adulthood, as revealed between Garbo, Hutcherson, and Richard, Richmond, her two older boys that she still retains a very strong bond with to this day. There are other aspects of chimp life, the trials and tribulations of growing up, both for males and for females. And then what happens in old age, to both, again, males and females. And to be sure, while those aspects are being covered in Chimp Empire, I'm not sure they're featured as much as James initially thought he wanted to, because events sort of just took over. Again, they're chimps. You can't direct them to do what you want them to do. And as things turn out, certain events happened involving dominant struggles between Jackson and another individual, young individual, Abrams. This ongoing conflict between the two groups that we've studied escalated, and they're there to film this remarkable battle scene at the end of the third episode, which, you know, really puts people in the midst of what really happens.
So how much was luck involved in creating Chimp Empire? After this short break, we'll be back with John to chat about where his intimate knowledge of the Ngogo chimps weighed in and where serendipity played its hand in creating the extraordinary scenes we witness in Chimp Empire. First, let's catch up with our own amazing ape, assistant producer Damel Zaban. Hello there.
Hello. Hope everyone's enjoying another installment of our special Chimp Empire series. I'd like to begin by giving a big heartfelt thank you to our newest Patreon subscriber, Jennifer Lauren. I know I sound like a broken record every episode, but we truly appreciate the support. Our nonprofit wants to make the world a better place for primates, both human and non-human. We believe that begins with education and creating awareness, and this podcast is designed to do that. So thank you, Jennifer. We love you and our ever-growing troop of patrons. If anyone else would like to support us, please go to talkingapes.org, and in the top right-hand corner, you'll see a link that says become a patron if you'd like to join our troop, or there's a donate button for one-off donations too. Now for some more listener comments about the wonderful Chimp Empire. Francis Decker said it was impressive, informative, and immersive. Anna said, I really enjoyed it. And Winona said, I was absolutely enthralled by this series. Just a quick reminder to listeners to please click follow or subscribe in whichever app you're listening on. It helps us ride those algorithms so we can grow and get more visibility. And it helps you to know when we release a new episode. Now back to Jarrett, who's going to read out another one of your questions to Chimp Empire director James Reed.
Thanks, Demelza. This is a question from Karen. She wrote in asking, how are the chimpanzees given names? Does the government of Uganda name each individual so that the researchers and the documentary filmmakers can share them? James?
So the chimps are named by the Ngogo scientists. And it began with John and David when it was just them. Once they sort of they were getting to know the chimps, they decided to give them names after jazz musicians initially, and then they sort of ran out of famous jazz musician names. They moved on to Hollywood stars, and then it just became a lot more random, and people just named them after people they knew or whatever. So it's all the naming is done by the the Ngogo Chimpanzee Project.
And now back to that question of serendipity with John Matani. It feels in watching it like there were these moments of serendipity that, first of all, you have to be there a long time. And certainly, you know, when you've been there over two decades like you have, you've seen a lot of things that just can't end up on film, unfortunately. But they seem to have struck gold. We can talk about specific moments, you know, whether it's the violence between the chimps, it's the hunting. Yeah, some of those things occur on a regular basis, but having a camera there, and especially having a camera crew as skilled as theirs to capture some of that, the rain dance. From your perspective and all your years of experience, how much serendipity was there in that year and a half of filming?
There was a tremendous amount of luck, but, you know, James made his luck by making this massive commitment to be there for so long. The battle scene, which he knew he wanted to film, a battle scene between the two groups, that occurred during the third shoot. You know, they had already been there for over half a year trying to film something like this. And finally, by being so patient, they finally did sort of luck into a scene like that.
How often would something like that normally occur?
It just depends. You know, there are periods when they're seem to be interacting and fighting on almost a weekly basis.
Oh, okay.
And then you can go through long stretches of time where nothing happens at all. I was just there for 2 months and there was maybe one encounter, and that only occurred at long distance. A long distance shouting match, there was no physical confrontation. So, you know, so they were lucky. And they were lucky, especially being there for the third shoot with that big explosion of chrysophyllum. It's one fruit that comes into that sort of mass fruit on a very unpredictable basis. Once every 2, 3, 4, 5 years, they just happened to be lucky that they were there during this massive crop, and probably a crop bigger than I've ever seen before. They were also lucky that it happened that this particular tree is scattered throughout the forest, but it happened to fruit right in this area of overlap between the two groups, which brought them together more frequently than they normally would have come into contact. I've been at Ngogo for over 20, nearly 30 years and seen many a chrysophyllum nest come in and out, and I've never seen chrysophyllum fruit in that exact area. So they were lucky there.
Yeah.
So there was a tremendous amount of serendipity. But again, you know, James, again, made his luck. And he made his luck by making the kind of commitment that he made to filming there.
Going back to creating that, was that something that, I'm wondering about the permissions to do that. It's like, did he have to work that out? Was it your responsibility as the researchers to work that out with you? Did that have to be worked out with the Ugandan government, with the Wildlife Authority? I mean, or all of those parties involved? Because that is a huge commitment in one area to bring in outside teams like that.
The answer is all of the above. So permissions need to be gained by the Uganda Wildlife Authority, by the Makerere University Biological Field Station, which maintains our field station at Ngogo, and us. You had to get buy-in from the scientists and researchers who were at Ngogo at any one time when those the film crews were there. And, you know, we've had, again, a lot of film teams at Ngogo over the years, and it just sort of varies with the depending on who's there. And I think he did get tremendous buy-in from everybody who was at Ngogo during these film shoots. And I attribute this to the camera ops and to the field producers. They just turned out to be wonderful people who understood, first and foremost, that the primary mission is to be there doing research. So, you know, they would never step in front of us to get a shot. And given how kind and considerate they were of us, we were more than happy to help them in every situation. So it was a give and take, but I think that given that everybody got along so well, that there really was this true collaboration between the people making the film on the ground, making the film, and those of us associated with the Ngogo Chimpanzee Project, the researchers who are there, who are more than willing to help them in any way possible.
That's an interesting point. Unlike Warriors, in Warriors, there's interviews with you and David and others, and those are a big part of that film. And, you know, most of the film there, it looks like it's relying on some of the things that were shot over the years by you guys as you were there witnessing these things. And then it's your telling of it in these interviews versus Chimp Empire, which you get no scientist has seen. It's fully you again, you feel like you're a mosquito or another chimp wandering around with the chimps. But this is the first time I've heard about this. So you were actually still doing research. You were conducting research while they were filming.
Oh, yeah, I was trying to. And they were giving me the freedom to do what I wanted when I was there, which was a bit unusual.
Where is the balance and where is the potential conflict in that? Because, again, you don't appear. Like, if you're standing there doing observations, you never appear in the film. That's an interesting dance you must have had to do, or they had to do, to be on the cameras. You're trying to help them understand what they're seeing so they can film it, and yet you're making your observations as well.
It is a delicate balance again, given the history of work at Ngogo and so many film teams being out there so many times. I think it just worked out how I try to get what I want done, and well, simultaneously helping out the film crew. And again, I think both of us were respectful of what we wanted to be doing there, that everything worked out. And everybody, as a result, I think, was happy to cooperate. Again, I said before that James and I are good friends, and, you know, I wanted to help him make the best film that he could possibly make on the Ngogo chimp. So that weighed heavily on my actions and how I operated while the film team was there. And I'll be honest, I'm getting older, and I just can't do the field work in the same way that I'm accustomed to. So I'm happy to slow down and get out of the way when I need to. A lot more now than, say, 20 years ago. I would have been a lot less tolerant.
I smiled.
People like this.
You made a comment in when I was watching Warriors, and you made a comment towards the end of that. You said something about the hills in Ngogo seem to be getting steeper as you get older, or something to that effect.
They continue to get steeper each and every year that I'm there. You know, back in the old days, chimps would take off up a hill, race up the hill, and, you know, at the top of the hill, I'd be right there with them. Now I go, but I'm not there anymore. Just the way it is.
Maybe follow.
I've come to accept it.
Maybe that's where it got its name, in Ngogo. It's just the chimps, just they take off and they go. I wanted to ask you about the chimps. You're there making your observations. After habituating and studying these chimps over all these years, I'm sure if you went out there maybe with a field assistant on your own, and watching the chimps, they're so used to you. Was there a noticeable reaction to the chimps when the crews came out, and then over the course of that year and a half, did you see that shift, or is it they have just seen so many crews that they're kind of used to crews and they didn't pay attention? I'm curious about, and the next question will be about them hunting and reacting to one another. They're almost telepathic. I'm curious about your perspective, having not only observed chimps for all these years, but observed these chimps. You know individuals so well. They're like family members.
Well, the first thing I'd say with respect to this is you will know, having studied chimps or watched chimps in the wild, that each and every individual is different. So there are some chimps who were there right from the very get-go and who have always seemed to be this way, who don't seem to care, practically catatonic around humans. So I don't pay a bit of attention to the film crew and us. And there were others who are a bit warier. And I wasn't there for the first shoot, but I can remember some of the camera ops telling me after I got there for the second shoot, now, you know, there's certain individuals who are having difficulty filming because they seem to be a bit wary. Toward the end, at the end of the fifth shoot, it's like all that. Most of it had dropped. There's still some individuals that have been and always will be, I think, a bit warier of humans than others. But, you know, being there just a month or so ago, that with a couple of the camera ops on Chimp Empire, we just sort of step in from day one and hit the ground running, filming these guys. And they don't seem to pay that much attention to us, which is really quite remarkable, something that I can't wrap my head around and just don't understand why they're so inattentive to us. So the analogy I frequently make with humans is that, you know, if you had somebody following you around all day, from the moment you wake up, follow you to the bathroom, watch what you're doing, watch you make breakfast, eat, sort of take off, go to work, be there right with you each and every step of the way, you probably get pretty annoyed fairly quickly. But the chimps, after becoming habituated to our presence, just seem to have gotten into this place where they accept our presence. And it's something I just have a hard time still understanding and wrapping my head around why their acceptance of which I'm quite grateful for, but don't understand how we do become sort of flies on the wall to them.
Hmm. Yeah, because again, in some of the filming, especially when things get a bit hectic, and chimps are running all over the forest, the humans seem to be like another tree or something. They're running around. They don't seem to be paying attention to them at all.
You can get a sense of this. I don't know if you've seen one of these making of videos that Netflix released about a month ago.
Right.
And there is this remarkable scene of the camera ops filming the battle scene at the end of the third episode. And you can see that people are right in the middle of things with chimps running around you, but that's what happens. You know, the chimps are just so focused and just have all their attention on what they're doing with other chimps. But they will run around you. You think as a human observer that they're completely out of control, but it's clear that they're not because they're running around you. You know, I've seen them kill an individual from another group right in front of me, and there are chimps running in and out of the pile all the time, jumping in, pounding the poor guy, and then jumping out. And, you know, you're there, and we're keeping a respectful distance, but there's still chimps flying around us, and it's clear that they're cognizant of our presence because they are running around us. They're not running into us. They look like they're out of control, but they're not. They're completely in control.
Going back to your involvement being unparalleled, what was your role in the sort of post-production side? I know you went to Bristol and you were involved there I don't know on what level, so maybe you could talk about that, from everything from script writing to looking at scenes and helping them understand how they fit together in what they filmed. Because in talking to Ben Saad again about, you know, he was officially the DP on this, or director of photography on this, but as he said, normally a director of photography is directing the photography around actors. And this was very much catch as catch can. And so he said, I didn't feel very much like a director at this point. So this film was evolving as it was being filmed. I would think that your input there would be really critical to kind of keep them mentally on track. I mean, them being James and the cameraman and stuff, because they're trying to build and tell this story, but they don't even know where this story is really going to go. One of the strengths of this to me is that we get to know individual chimps, and we follow those chimps. So we start to see chimps not as a group of animals running around in the forest, but as individuals. And as you talked about a minute ago, those individuals have their own personalities. And in building those personalities for us on the screen, my guess was that you had to be involved in saying, okay, you've seen this and you've seen this. You might see this out of this individual, or you might see this individual relating to these two other individuals. It seems like your experience and your knowledge of chimps helped create a roadmap for them to know what to look for.
That's partially true, but I can't take credit for things that I wasn't responsible for. You know, the fact that this is a character-based study and series featuring particular individuals and their lives, that's all James. You know, that's what he wanted to do right from the get-go. I indicated earlier that he wanted to tell a story of a mother and an infant, you know, but he had selected Christine Isabel before I got there during the first shoot, having filmed some interesting things. That opening scene of the whole series, that was filmed in the very first shoot by Ben Saad. And it's a remarkable, scene. But let me go on. You know, the other characters were oftentimes already selected by James before I got out there. For only the second shoot, Gus, the young male struggling to fit in. He was picked out during that first shoot again, given some of the scenes that Ben and others had filmed. You know, there were other parts in character development. And as you say, I can provide some details regarding their history and things to maybe look out for. But, you know, I can't take credit for the story and the characters and the way they were shown and developed. That's all James and his partner, business partner at Underdog Films, Matt Houghton, who was the primary scriptwriter. So, you know, I helped out a little. You asked about the post-production aspect, and here again, it's something that kind of just evolved totally out of the blue and a surprise to me after filming completed at the start of 2022, I forget when, shortly thereafter, James asked me if I wanted to come out to Bristol to quote-unquote help on post-production. And I had no idea what he meant, but when I got there, started to look at the script, if not before even I got there, sat down with Matt for a long stretches of time, going over word by word, line by line, scene by scene, each and every word in the script. And, you know, normally somebody like me, a scientific consultant on a series like this, isn't given this kind of access. Maybe, I think two things are going on. One, my previous association with James and friendship, but also James is a bit is unusual in that he really wants to adhere to the science and depict these characters in an absolutely true way, as true as they can be depicted in a series like this. You know, having said this, some artistic license is being taken here and there. And in retrospect, I had a few not sit down, drag out arguments with Matt and James about some of the things being said and written into the script. But, you know, I realize one of the things that I've always recognized is that, you know, these guys know what they're doing because it's their business. If you left it up to me, David, to write a script like this, nobody would watch. You know, we'd bore people silly. So I knew that, you know, they're trying to make a series that will appeal to the mass public, and left in my hands that, you know, it probably wouldn't be watched by anybody. So
I laughed when you sent me that in an email and you said that if you made the film, nobody, they'd be bored silly. I guess that's the balancing act. And I wanted to ask you about that. Between what we're trying to do as communicators in communicating to the lay public, in this case, you know, the Netflix audience, we're assuming that they don't know much about chimps. And most of them, if they've ever seen a chimp outside of a YouTube or a television screen, it's in their local zoo. So those chimps are behaving and acting and in a setting that's so unlike Ngogo. So you're trying to convey to them the sense of what these animals are like, and in this case, as individuals. That's why I was curious about your scientific role in the post-production as well, because you do have this balance between what Netflix is expecting as a production that will appeal to the audience. Yet, as a scientist, what is it you would want people to walk away from watching this and understand about chimps?
Well, I think maybe there's two things. I've always recognized how incredibly lucky I've been. I'm quite fond of saying that I've been to places and seen and done things that most people can only dream about. You know, I've lived with various apes for 45, 50 years of my life now, nearly. I've just been afforded all these remarkable opportunities to live alongside our closest living relatives in a variety of venues for nearly the past 30 years with Ngogo chimpanzees. So I know that the things that I've done, the things that I've written, isn't going to reach a mass audience, and that here with a series like this, we can provide people who won't be given the kinds of chances that I've been given to have this immersive experience where they really be put in a situation where they can see what chimps are truly like. So that's my first hope, that the series really does give your average viewer that immersive experience and a deeper sense and appreciation of what these animals are really like. And then my second hope, really, I think, is that having gained whatever knowledge they do gain, they take that newfound knowledge and maybe go out and try to do something to help protect and save these animals. Because they're highly endangered animals along with the other great apes. So I guess maybe in the words of Baba Diem, a Senegalese engineer conservationist, he once said that we will conserve only what we love. We will love only what we understand. We'll understand only what we are taught. So my hope is that this is kind of a teaching moment. Chimp Empire is a teaching moment where people will learn more about chimps and then take that understanding to move on and do something to help conserve them. Because this would be a far poorer world without these animals.
When you watch this film, does it feel like you're watching a family film? You know these chimps so well, and you look at the screen in a different way than any of us would. You look at them, and those are individuals. They don't need any, you know, overtype to come up and say, this is Nadine or Christine or Gus or, you know, any of the others, Jackson. You immediately recognize who they are. I'm really curious about what you see when you look at this film.
Looks like no other film on chimps that I've ever seen. I'll say that I was just blown away right from the get-go when James was sharing rushes with me as soon as that second shoot, I think. And as he was putting things together right from the start, and I was just stunned at what I was seeing and the final product after the grade, after, you know, the sort of photoshopping, so to speak, that they do. It's just absolutely, the footage is absolutely stunning. And I've had friends who work with me on Ngogo who said to me, my God, I don't see that when I'm right there with them. And it's true, because the camera has the ability to pan in ways that we simply can't. You know, we maintain a strict distance between them and us. We use binoculars, but still you're not getting that same kind of imagery that you're getting on the film. So what do I see? I see stuff that I'm not sure I've ever seen in my life. And that's true with certain of the, you know, I said this, certain of the scenes, they've caught on film some things that I haven't seen in over 30 years working with Ngogo and Mahalie chimps. the scene of the Carter and Morton and others inspecting Porcupine's body. You know, I've seen them kill other individuals from other groups. They don't do what they were doing, inspecting the carcass of another individual that they know.
Were you there when that happened?
I wasn't there when it happened. Actually, no, that's the battle scene. No, I wasn't there. That was during the third shoot, and a lot of the credit for that, all that goes to, again, Ben Saad, who was there in film. I think that might, to my mind, be the most remarkable scene in the whole series, the end of the episode one, where he's panning in to film all those reactions by the chimps. Upon discovery of Porcupine's body. I'm not sure. I'm actually, in retrospect, glad that I wasn't there. Porcupine was an old friend. I knew him from youth as an orphan. He was one of my favorite chimps. I was quite broken up for several days after hearing from afar that he had died at the hands of chimps that he knew quite well. That was one of the darkest moments I think I've had in nearly 30 years studying chimpanzees at Ngogo. Not sure how I'd reacted if I was there on site. Maybe another spoiler alert, another remarkable scene, I think. That final death scene of Jackson, where he's making that day nest. Again, a serendipitous event. They had filmed the battle where he's fatally injured the day before. And then he disappears the next day. He shows up practically at camp. And Kevin Lee, one of the researchers, just happened to bump into him and took it from there. Could have easily escaped, evaded, never been seen again. We would not have known what would have happened, but got lucky there too. But that scene of him making his deathbed, when I did see it the first time, tears came to my eyes. And to be honest, I didn't even like the guy. Nor did Jackson like me very much. It was mutual. But I still watch that scene and, well, so.
I can't even imagine how. I guess that's why I asked the question, if it feels like a family film, because you know these.
No.
I think you answered it well. I just think, you know, to know them so well, and even in our own families, we don't always like our siblings and our uncles or our aunts or whatever. I mean, there's going to be the Jacksons that we don't get along with, and they don't get along with us. But I mean, then there are others that we have this, like Porcupine.
You know, Jackson never liked me very much. And maybe that's the reason for my historical disdain of him. Disdain is too harsh a word. He was never one of my favorite chimps. That's a better way to put it.
Something that just popped to mind is one of the things that hit me in watching Warriors was how emotional you and the others were, David and others. And maybe that comes out in your relationship with James in making this film, that there seems to, when you watch this, and I've talked to some other people who don't know chimps very well, or at all, and I've had them watch Chimp Empire, and the thing that they walk away with is the emotion. They feel like there's so much emotion in these chimps, and I almost feel like it's partly because of people like you that have conveyed your emotions about this group of chimps and the individuals, and they somehow translated that.
Again, I'm not going to take credit where credit isn't due, and I would, you know, maybe, I'm not sure if I said this before, but if people like the series, it's due to two things. one than Go-Go Chimps, because first and foremost, this is about them. It's their story. They're the quote-unquote actors, and they're the ones performing and showing you what their lives are like. And second, credit has to go to James. You know, he's the one who put this together. It's not me. It's not Go-Go researchers. It's James. It's Matt Houghton, the script writer. And it's, again, this wonderful team that James put together. Camera ops, who came back repeatedly. You know, James's original idea, filming chimps is hard. It's physically demanding. James's original idea, I think, was, oh, I'll bring in a group of camera ops for the first shoot and then bring in another team and then maybe rotate guys back. But he thought he'd have this constant slew of people coming in. One of the reasons they were able to get some of the remarkable footage they got was because these people kept on coming back. And with each time they came back, the better they got. I consider a lot of these guys as part of the Go-Go Chimpanzee Project. They're practically chimpanzee researchers. They know Go-Go. They can get around easily. They know the chimps. They can identify individuals. They sort of have an idea of what's going on, who's who, where they'll go now. So again, you know, I just came back with Ewan Dreiberg and Manchuri, two of the camera ops on Chimpanbar for an entirely different project. But go out first day. They're filming, but, you know, hitting the ground running. And they're part of the Go-Go family now.
It's interesting when in our conversation with Ben Satt, I said, would you want to film chimps again? And he says, I want to go back to Ngogo. He said, they're family now to me. He said, I think a lot about like how this individual's doing or how that individual's doing. And there is a real sense of connection he had.
Well, Ben's part of the Ngogo family too. He's an amazing cameraman. Got some remarkable shots throughout the series. He's become a very good friend too. Yeah. Ben's welcome back anytime, as far as I'm concerned. And they all have developed this connection to the chimps and other researchers at Ngogo. So yeah, it is a big family.
You guys are growing almost as big as the chimp groups.
It is becoming an increasingly large family, but well, that's okay. You know, I had said already, it just was a tremendous joy to work on this project. And one of the reasons was developing these ties and friendships with everybody involved. I consider not only James, Matt, that Underdog, but all these other people, the camera scale producers, line producer in the office was a wonderful person. Andrew Shee, just one big happy family now.
John, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate you taking the time to share all of this and what's gone into this film and your perspective on this. I think it's going to add so much to what people understand when they watch the film and come back to this. I hope that they listen to it on both ends. They listen to it, go watch the film, and then come back and listen to your words and your thoughts once again. So thank you.
Well, I hope so. Again, I've been delighted to be here today with you. And let me just say at the end, perhaps, that I'm retired now. COVID struck. I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. You know, I just feel really fortunate to have met James, to be his friend, to have him involve me so much in this series. It really was a lifesaver. It's been one of the best opportunities of my life, one of the best experiences of my life. And I'm quite proud to have been a very small part of it. So thank you again.
Well, thank you again for doing this. I really, really appreciate it. And I think for people who are listening to this, it's going to give them a lot of insight into what they're watching on the screen to a truly amazing film. And I know you've repeatedly given James and the crew credit, but you know it would never have happened without your three decades of work there, you and David and the others. you opened the window for all of us to see what's going on at Ngogo, and that was critical. So thank you.
Thank you. Again, happy to do this.
All right. Cheers.
We'll be in touch.
I want to thank Professor John Matami for sharing his insights into the Ngogo chimps and his role in making this amazing docuseries a reality. Also, just a quick note, John will be joining us in season 3 of Talking Apes with an in-depth conversation about his decades of primate work and specifically the extraordinary events at Ngogo Rainforest in Uganda's Kibale National Park. You'll find links to Chimp Empire, including images and additional video from the film, on our website at talkingapes.org. You've been listening to Talking Apes, the podcast that gets to the heart of what's happening with and to apes like us. Our conversations are with folks from across this planet of apes, writers, researchers, conservationists, scientists, and even cameramen, all getting us closer to understanding who we are and why. Because ensuring the survival of the other 4 great apes is the only way to ensure our own. I would like to thank our entire Talking Apes team for all the work they do in bringing you this podcast. And I would like to thank you, the donors and Patreon members who make Talking Apes successful through your generous support and the sharing of this podcast. If you appreciate what you're hearing on Talking Apes, consider supporting us. Please visit our website at talkingapes.org. Finally, I would also like to thank the dedicated folks on the front line of great ape survival. We hope through Talking Apes, we're able to shine a light on the incredible selfless work that you do every day to ensure great apes, primates, and their forest homes like Ngogo survive and thrive into the future. I'm Jerry Ellis. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sharing with family and friends the Talking Apes podcast.